Hey guys, this is the Real Life Monopoly Podcast. This is your co-host, Jeffrey Donis, alongside my partners and brothers, Kenneth and Kerwin Donis. We are real estate investors, and the point of our podcast is to help you reach your financial goals, which will allow you to have time to focus on your true passion so that you can live not only a happier, but more fulfilled life. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, this is Jeffrey Donis, and today we will be having John Okocha out of Texas. John is a multifamily real estate investor who has acquired over 1,700 plus units in just 2 years. John is an awesome guy, really, really high energy and very, very knowledgeable. So without further ado, let's get right to it.
Thank you for tuning into the Real Estate Monopoly Podcast. This is your co-host, Jeffrey Donis, alongside my partners and brothers, Kerwin and Kenneth Donis. Today on the show, we'll be having John Okocha. John, do you mind introducing yourself to the audience?
Yeah, my name is John Okocha, Vice President of Acquisitions at Elevate Commercial Investment Group. Currently, we have over 2,500 units and are looking to buy more. Actually, I think we have over 2,200 units are looking to buy more. And yeah, I mean, thank you for having me here. And I'd love to answer any questions that you might have.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. We've been pretty much lucky to have you and your partner Jorge on the podcast. So we're very grateful for your time. I just wanted to go into your story. I mean, do you mind kind of touching on how you got into real estate in the first place?
Yeah. So it all started when I read the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. A really good friend of mine. I was 16 years old at the time. I met him in the Future Business Leaders of America class. This was after school. I remember walking into the classroom and we were just having a really good conversation. I remember seeing how he was dressed. He was all preppy and all that. I mean, and nobody in my school really dressed like that. And we were just, you know, having a conversation and I really liked what I heard. And he was like, hey, you know, I guess he like saw something in me. He was like, hey, you know, you should check out the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I checked it out and finished it within 3 days and basically never been the same since. After that, I went to my first seminar. That's when I met my first millionaire. And when I met my first millionaire, I knew it was possible to make money. It just wasn't something that I was around. So I did that. I found a mentor, started wholesaling properties. So I wholesaled a couple of deals when I was still in college. And that's actually how I paid rent for my sophomore year of college. While I was there, I took some financial advising. I took some financial advising, not courses, but I had a mentor that was a financial advisor. So I went into that space, decided that space wasn't the one for me, got back into real estate, started selling investment properties. One of the investors that I had asked me, like, hey, man, instead of selling me properties, why don't you just buy properties for me? And I'm just like, well, you know, I don't know about that. And he's like, well, you know, I'll pay you more than what you're getting paid right now. And I'm like, okay, I think I'm done thinking about it, right? So, and then while I was there, I met one of the partners at Elevate Commercial Investment Group. They told me that they had just purchased 27 units and that they were looking to purchase more units. And acquisitions was something that I specialized in on a single family side. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, if you need a property, if you need to buy something, you know, I'm your guy. Like I'll find it for you. You know, within 30 days, we had over 400 units under LOI and basically never looked back.
That is awesome. And we love to hear it. And that's actually something we also have background in single family acquisitions. We would talk to sellers all the time and obviously, you know, get those contracts. So I'm just curious, how was it different going from single family acquisitions to multifamily? Because I feel like those are like night and day, but are they?
I don't really think so, to be honest. I think it's just the calculations are different. And then underwriting is just a little bit more sophisticated. I think that's really it. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just psychology. You know, you need a motivated seller. And then, you know, if you're raising money, you need somebody that's motivated to put money in a deal. I mean, I think all of it's just psychology, honestly.
Okay. And just curious, does it change depending on the unit size? How does that work?
Oh, that's a great question. So typically when it comes to a deal that's under $1 million, it's going to be something that is going to be what the bank considers non-recourse. So you won't be liable if the property, if it goes into default, and it'll be taken as far as I understand, like you essentially, when it's non-recourse, it's not going to affect the owner personally, you know, unless there's like a, you know, we'll call like a bad boy carve out or something like that. So that's when it comes to like under $1 million. But when it comes to over $1 million, it's going to be non-recourse.
Awesome. To kind of touch on that, so of course in single family, I'm pretty sure you were going direct to seller. We feel like, well, what we found is for the bigger deals, it might be a little bit different, but have you found success going direct to seller with anything above 100 units or 80 units, or do you guys typically go through a broker?
That's a really good question. Me specifically, my niche is with brokers. The way I look at it is, you know, these brokers are doing the exact same thing. They're calling 100 owners a day. You know, if I call 10 brokers, then I've called 1,000 owners that day. So that's just how I look at it. I'd rather partner with a broker that's consistently getting deals, you know, that's mastered that aspect of the business, you know, pay them their fee and then just purchase the property. That's how I've done it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you mentioned that you were the VP of acquisitions before we started the recording. Do you mind kind of going into how you got into that role and then what you're currently doing now?
Yeah, definitely. So basically how I got into the role at the beginning. So George and Eric, they actually own a wholesale company as well. So the company that I was working for previously, I was purchasing properties for them. And how I did it, it was actually similar to the way I look for properties now, which is I only spoke to wholesalers. That's all I spoke to. I specialized in wholesalers. I actually didn't go to the seller. And for me, it was just different because I just like having more of like a business conversation, you know, and they have the deal. And of course, you have to sift through a lot of different, you know, like bad deals and all that. Like 90% of your inbox is going to be bad deals. But for that 10%, you know, you talk to the wholesaler and, you know, you negotiate the price maybe a little bit lower and, you know, you just get it that way. So that's how I found deals. And I bought maybe 20 properties within 8 months, just, you know, doing it that way. And about four of those properties came from one of the partners at Elevate, and that's how we built that business relationship. We knew each other for about a year already, and and you know, he told me that they were looking for more properties, and I told him, hey man, like I'm your acquisitions guy, like I can make it happen, and you know, the proof is in the pudding.
I love that. We're big on partnerships, obviously, you know, we lucked out with two natural brothers, but
that's awesome. Yeah. I wish I had two brothers to do business with.
Yeah. But, you mentioned that you're the broker liaison for the team. And I would just love to know, I mean, when you were starting out, how would you approach, you know, creating those broker relationships and how did you get them to give you the time of day?
That's a good question. The way we approached it, the market that we targeted for our first deal that I did with them was Oklahoma. The brokers there aren't as savage as some of the brokers in Dallas. So it was a little bit easier when I started, just a little bit easier, I think. And also going into it, we partnered with somebody out of Ohio that had already 2,000 units. So I was entering a conversation with a broker. I told him like, hey, we already have 2,000 units, you know, in between us and our partners, we're just looking to purchase more. So the conversation was different. You know, I knew what questions to ask. You know, I had a list of questions that I looked at, you know, that I had those above my desk when I was talking to brokers. And that way I sounded like I knew what I was talking about. At the time, I didn't know completely what I was talking about, but I sounded like I did, which is the most important.
Yeah, that's awesome. And could you maybe just go into a few of the questions, if you remember what questions you would ask brokers?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask them questions about, you know, just common questions like, you know, is, you know, how many classic units are there? And, you know, is there any classic units? You know, are there any major big ticket items that need to be taken care of as far as like, you know, electrical, how are the roofs, you know, the foundation, things like that. I would ask about the area. And then of course ask about like the rent bumps, some of the potential rent bumps. Why is the investor selling? Just the, you know, typical common questions that some of them actually pass from the single family side. But yeah, just questions to show that you understand, you know, what you're getting yourself into. Like if you're actually buying an apartment, like what questions would you ask? Those sort of questions.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And Kenneth is actually also the one that's underwriting the deal, so he's just been over time gained the knowledge to know what questions to ask. But I was just curious, something we've heard, and I think we've also experienced this, is you know, meeting the brokers face to face has been better than just calling them or even emailing. Have you shared that experience as well?
I agree. And meeting the broker face to face, seeing if there's something that y'all can relate to outside of real estate, I think that's perfect, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a personal game, it's a relationship game. So if there's something that you can connect on outside of real estate, I would definitely agree. You know, something that will differentiate you from the other people, you know, that way they, you know, they'll get a property and they're like, okay, maybe I'll just give this guy a shot. I'll just send it to him. I'll just see what happens. You know, but that's what you want. And like after you close the deal, make sure, you know, you stay in touch with them. You know, if there's anything small that you can do for them that, you know, that they like, you know, something, even if it's something like quirky or something like that. You know, one of my good friends, he knew that one of his brokers just liked like peanut butter or something like that. So he sent him like the best peanut butter he could find. Just stuff like that. You know, one of the brokers that we worked with, I knew that he liked fishing. And I paid attention to it. And I remember that for over a year. And when we closed, you know, we sent him like a nice little fishing thing. And he was like, you know, he really actually couldn't believe it. He was like in shock. And yeah, then he sent us another deal that was like a massive deal. So yeah, so that stuff works. Yeah, but like when you touch those small details, that it really gets people's attention, especially nowadays, people are very, very distracted. So when you pay attention to small details like that, it gets people's attention.
Yeah, that's something that keeps coming up. And I mean, we've obviously, like, that's what we try to do. And Kerwin's, like he said, is the one that's really being in touch and finding out like small things, like when their birthday is or something like that, when they close a deal, congratulating them. Yeah. So you were pretty much working as the acquisitions vice president, and I assume that you were working with brokers. How did you transition into the investor relations department, and why was that? And what skills did you transition from sales over to working with those investors? I know sales still applies, but how does it look different and what's similar?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, as far as like the skills transitioning, like it's still a people game. You know, it's still like a detail game, paying attention to the details. The main reason why I transferred over is because we were getting so many deals. Because after we closed one of our big properties, a lot of people wanted to partner with us, and that basically what that meant is now instead of focusing on getting deals, I'm going to focus on essentially closing on deals, which means that we need to focus on raising money. So I transferred over to the investor relations side of things, and it was a little bit different because it's not, you're not looking at deals, you're not, you know, underwriting and then presenting it to the business partners and that kind of thing. You're not necessarily putting the deal together. You're basically just raising money for it. You're basically just selling it to investors and finding investors that their criteria matches the deal.
Yeah, awesome. So on your first deals, when you were the vice president of the acquisitions, was there someone else that was in charge of the equity raise, of raising capital?
Well, not necessarily. It was just something that we all pretty much did. I didn't know much about it, but, you know, I kind of asked a couple of my friends, like, hey, you like multifamily, you know, that kind of thing. there wasn't necessarily someone in charge, but there was kind of split up between amongst all the partners. And then as time and deals went on, we spread out the opportunity, the responsibilities, and we started focusing like, hey, like this is what John does. John talks to the investors.
That's awesome. That's kind of what I've taken like charge of. What was like the first action step? As soon as you got into that role, what was like the first thing that you kind of did, and how did that look, and how's that developed? You can just touch on first. What was the first thing, I'd like to know if you don't mind, what was like the first thing you actually started doing in that?
Well, so we had a multiple leads coming in already, you know, the way we were generating leads. So it was my job to call these leads and get them to soft commit to an investment. So what I would do, I had a script and everything, and I would, you know, go through and talk to ask them about like what, you know, how, you know, what had their experience in investments, are they accredited, what kind of deals are they looking for? And then if there was a good match, I'll tell them like, hey, you know, we got something, you know, 2x multiple, you know, southeastern part of the United States, coming up pretty soon. You know, if this deal works out for you and we have this kind of IRR, you know, would you be willing and able to invest in this kind of property? And if they say yes, you've got a soft commit right there. And then you basically just keep logging that until, you know, get a deal, and then you approach those investors. And it's easier to have that conversation. There's a lot less friction. Plus, they've already basically said yes, so it's a little bit easier to slip them in.
Go ahead, Kay.
Yeah, I would love to touch on that because I know that you said you guys had a lot of leads coming in. So
yeah,
I'm guessing you weren't necessarily in charge of making those leads come in, but if do you know like exactly how your system was set up to bring those leads in? Like, was it social media? Was it through word? Was it like previous investors?
Yeah, a lot of social media. I don't know if y'all are following George Abreu right now, but he's the king of social media right now. You know, when it comes to Elevate, I think that Elevate is the one that Elevate's the company that you're going to see the most on social media for sure, by far. And I think, and that's one of the reasons why we're getting so many deals. And right now, focusing on the investor relations side of things, that's like the main focus, because, you know, we need a lot of deals because we're getting a lot of action and a lot of people are seeing us. So now it's just closing those deals.
Okay. So when they see you, for example, you know, I'm scrolling through my Explorer page and I see you guys, is it that your social media is pointing them to go to your website, or are they like DMing you guys and you guys are responding?
It's all of the above. Mainly, you know, that those funnels, having those, you know, click funnels that go to your website.
Yeah, we actually do use a click funnel, but for those on our audience who don't know what a click funnel is, could you maybe just do a brief overview of what that is and how that works?
Well, I'm not on the marketing side, but as far as I understand, you know, having some sort of what we call a lead magnet, and then you have, once you have the lead magnet and they put their information in, you can use that. You can put that into a CRM that consistently, and then that's when you launch a drip campaign. It consistently gives your investors information so they feel comfortable to invest in 20-year deals. But that's as far as I know. I might be missing something.
No problem at all. Yeah, I appreciate that. And so say I reach out to George through his social media because I see one of his posts, and would you be the first one to get on the phone with me?
Most likely, it will be me or Eric.
Awesome. So do you mind kind of walking me through what, as a passive investor, I'm looking to invest, what can I expect on that first call?
Yeah. As a passive investor, first things first, I'm going to get to know the person, you know, what is your experience level? And another thing is, depending on, they could be calling for two different reasons. They could be calling straight from social media, or they could be calling from a specific deal that we have blasted. So if they're calling for a specific deal, then I'm going to kind of figure out kind of what they're, I'm probably not going to ask them what they're looking for, because they probably wouldn't have, you know, they're calling me on something that of what they're looking for. So I'm going to talk mainly about the deal on that sort of call. You know, going to ask them if they're accredited. Usually they just have a bunch of questions on the deal. So really I just explain the investment process. If they have questions about us, you know, I answer those questions and really just go from there.
No, yeah, that's awesome. So pretty much I know that there's a first call step, right? You get on the phone with them, you kind of introduce yourself, you get to know a little bit more about them. How soon are you reaching back out? Is this something that you're putting in a system and you're following up with them? Or are you kind of trying to get that soft commit on the first call?
That's a good question. I wouldn't go for the soft commit since we have a live deal. It really just depends if they have any questions. Some people are ready to go, and I'd say, hey, you know, use this link to sign the PPM and subscription documents, and here's the link to Wire as well. So that, you know, if they're ready to go, you send them a Wire. If they're not ready to go, it's because they have questions, so you answer those questions. If you need to consult with the underwriter or maybe one of your partners, you send the answers via email, and then you follow back up with them.
Awesome. And just to clarify, are these accredited investors you're referring to? And is that different if you're working with a sophisticated investor, or is it the same for both?
No, it'd basically be the same for both. If it's 506C, I'd only be speaking with accredited investors. I wouldn't speak to a sophisticated.
Yeah, that's awesome. So going into, say that they're a soft commit and we're pretty much I'm willing to invest $50,000 in a live deal that you have going on. What's the next step as a passive investor? What can I expect after we get off that call? Should I reach back out, or is something that you guys are going to reach back out to me?
And this is someone that's already committed.
I'm giving you a soft commitment of, let's say, 50,000. So I was talking to them, I'm not sure how it works with your company, but typically with ours, sorry about that. Typically with ours, we're going to just write them down, pencil them down as this. And once that deal is ready to go and we find something that would fit their criteria, we're going to reach out. Is that similar to yours?
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. So what if there's a deal that's ready to go at that moment, but this is the first time we've ever met and I'm already ready to, I'm going to tell you how much I'm willing to invest. Is there like a process that you guys take me through?
Well, yeah, I guess it really just depends on the context of, you know, how the conversation started. I mean, did the conversation start because they know you have a deal, or is it just they know you're an apartment investor, that sort of thing? And that really would just guide the process from there. You know, if they know that you're an apartment investor, then what I would do is I would see basically what the criteria is. You know, if the criteria is matches up the criteria of the deal that we have, then I would present the deal. If it doesn't, I would still present the deal and say, hey, you know, I know this doesn't match your criteria, but this is what we have right now. You know, if this is something that you're interested in, we could continue the conversation.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So to kind of transition into, you know, the next phase, what is your, you elevate, what is the company's goals for this year? Is there something that you guys are currently working on or some goals that you guys might have?
I agreed to acquire 2,500 more units.
So, okay, cool. So that, what would that total about? We have 2,200 right now. Is that what you mentioned? Is that right?
Yeah, so probably around 5,000.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's all through, now you guys are partnering up with different groups. So you're not really sourcing your own deals? Or is that something you guys are still doing?
Sorry?
Yeah, are you guys still sourcing your own deals?
Yeah, we're doing both. We're sourcing our own and we're JVing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So similar for us. I mean, we're really just reaching out to brokers. But to kind of transition into more of like your personal reasons as to why you're in the business in the first place. Do you mind kind of going into what your long-term goals are, maybe what your why is and what you're kind of going for?
Yeah, my goal is to launch a billion-dollar fund. What I'm going to do is I'm going to invest in different multifamily operators. We do pref equity, JV equity into multiple deals. And then after that, and that's just for like the first fund. And then after that, have other funds and invest in multiple businesses. You know, that's something that I've always been interested. I'm always been interested on the institutional private equity side. You know, looking at people like Steve Schwarzman, people like Leon Black, you know, looking at these huge institutional players that manage, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars under management. Something I've always been interested in. So that's basically the goal. You know, the goal for me would be to launch a $1 billion fund, invest in a lot of apartment deals, and then probably transition and just focusing on probably like large office and like large like condo developments and different things like that. Just exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. And one last question right before we transition into our express round. And it's kind of like a two-part question, but when it comes back to raising capital, do you mind touching on what the hardest part or the part that you thought would be harder than it actually was when you went into that? And the second part to that is, what was the part that you thought would be harder and it turned out to be easier than you thought it would be?
I think it all just comes down to trust. You know, the first real estate mentor I had, he said that trust is the highest form of money. You know, if someone trusts you, then, you know, some people won't even look at the investment summary. They'll just put the money in. So I would say that's the easiest and the hardest, you know, depending. It really just depends on how you build it. I think with social media, it's actually easier to build trust nowadays. I believe so. The truth is, if someone keeps seeing their face, they're going to build trust, even if you don't say anything. If they just keep seeing you, they're like, okay, this guy obviously isn't going to go away, so I think I can trust this guy. So I think that's a good, I think, and I think it's really just when it just boils down to mindset. You know, I think, you know, things being hard, and I think there's a difference between something being easy and simple. You know, I think hard, easy, and simple are goals are all like different things. I think it just really just boils down to perspective and then just opening your mind up to see different ways of accomplishing something. So, you know, when it comes to building trust, it's really just like, what is my skill set? What is going to be the easiest way for me to build trust with investors? And then just doing that.
No, yeah, I 100% agree. And that's exactly why, we're so active on social media. We try to be on multiple platforms and just try to be out there. And it's really like you said, it's just like if you're in front of everyone, you really are like exposing yourself, and it works towards like, you can't really hide anything if you're in front of them, you know? So I definitely agree. I see Jorge, or George, your partner, doing that like consistently. So I try to keep up with it. He's doing a really good job, though. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's all about who knows you. They say that it's not really about who knows you. So yeah, I think, yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, you'd be surprised who you walk in, like in the rooms that you walk into, and you just like bump into somebody. And then I was just in Miami last week and like, oh yeah, I know your company, you know, so that started a huge conversation. So that's, extremely important. Social media is extremely important.
Yeah. This is a quick to go into that, like networking, like you said, you're just like, you don't even know what you're doing, but like, it's such a small world in this industry as well. I feel like commercial real estate, especially multifamily, it's not that. There's like a people doing deals, right? There's a lot of people, but the people that like, compared to like wholesaling, I'm sure you were a wholesaler, you can kind of relate to that. There's so many people wholesaling now compared to the multifamily space. Oh, yeah. So like, I feel like everyone knows everyone, and if you're doing something bad, you're probably gonna, you know, be known. But if you're doing good things, you're also gonna be known. So it's like a, you know, just make sure you're on the right side of that.
100%. Yeah, life's too short to do bad things, and you can't expect. And there's a quote that I read today. You can't expect to live a beautiful life doing ugly things.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. No, 100%. Yeah, man, I'm going to go into our express round. I'll ask you 5 questions, and you could tailor the answers towards personal or business life. But I just wanted to make sure you were ready before I got started.
Let's do it.
Awesome. So what is the biggest mistake that you've made in real estate, and what did it teach you?
Biggest mistake. What's the biggest mistake that I've made in real estate? I would say probably just not fully going in on myself. Probably that's the biggest mistake, you know, just completely just trusting my own abilities, you know, and just seeing where that goes. So I'm trying to do that right now.
Awesome. No, 100%. Do you kind of mean like having confidence in your abilities?
I'd say that's probably my biggest mistake. Just not having 100% confidence in my abilities and just kind of just going with it. As far as like doing my own deal. Yeah. Cause I haven't necessarily done my own deal specifically. I mean, I have equity in other deals, but it's like, what if you just hit one up yourself, you know?
Yeah. Like a lead sponsor. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, why don't you do it? Like, why don't you try it? So I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it.
yeah, awesome, awesome. No, 100%. So, next question: what is your favorite book? And you can, like I said, tailor this towards business and personal.
Man, I think one of the most influential books I've read so far would probably be one of them being "Your First 100 Million" by Dan Pena. You know, that was a pretty eye-opening book when I read it. I'm probably going to read it again. And he really talks about how to really dig into, it's a lot of different things about how to build a business, what he focuses on is what he calls the QLA method, the quantum leap method. And that's basically how to scale your business at lightning speed and build very, very quickly. And he's like, you know, like, you know, anybody can do it. And he talks about the mindset required to do that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that one as well. What is the best piece of advice that you have been given or that you would give someone?
The best piece of advice that I've ever been given was given to me by my dad. And I still listen to it right now. And he said, always surround yourself by people that are smarter than you. That's how I got into Elevate. And that's how I graduated early from high school. That's how I got into a good college, and that's how I'm getting into private equity real estate and going to launch my fund by being around people that are smarter than me.
Yep. Awesome. What is a daily habit that you would accredit some of your success to?
I'd say meditation is a huge, you know, having a vision board and then looking and then meditating on what you want every single day. I think that's extremely important because then you'll attract it a lot quicker into your life. I think that's extremely important.
Yep. So for people in our audience that want to get in touch with you, what would you say is the best way for them to do so?
I think it would be through my Instagram at Johnny Equity. That would be a really good way. That's probably the fastest way to reach me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely have that in the show notes. John, like I said in the beginning, we really do appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you and all your business partners. You guys are doing awesome things. So we definitely look forward to staying in touch, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Real Life Monopoly Podcast with the Donis Brothers. If you want to learn more about what we do, make sure to visit our website, www.donisinvestmentgroup.com. And if you aren't already, make sure to follow us on all platforms at Donis Brothers. Let's be great today. Have a good one.